And for an overview of how other races are shaping up around the country, we're joined by two editors from the Cook Political Report. Jennifer Duffy follows Senate campaigns. Amy Walter tracks races for the House. Welcome back to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Amy Walter, let's start with you. There were several polls over the weekend that show a tightening among voters in House races where the Democratic advantage seems to be narrowing. Are you seeing those numbers playing out in the races that you're tracking?
Well, what we're seeing nationally is a number of big national polls, the Pew poll, for example, the Gallup poll. We've also seen polling came out of ABC, Washington Post. And yes, the so-called generic ballot advantage, that's where the questions ask you, would you like to see a Democrat elected to Congress or a Republican? Democrats have had a significant lead on that question, really going back for the last couple of months. That has narrowed in some cases significantly, in others just a bit. It seems that we're looking at an average of Democrats, maybe 7 to 11 point advantage. That's still significant, but it also suggests in some of these close races in more traditionally Republican districts, this may give the Republican candidate the edge they need to win their race.
And numerically then, if Democrats need 15 seats to win control of the House, where would you say things stand now?
Well, I still think that Democrats do have the momentum going into this election. They are poised to take the majority. I think what you're looking at then is something like a floor of pickups for Democrats close to 20 seats. And the ceiling could go as high as 35. It's probably a bit lower, maybe 20 to 30 seats, with Democrats, I think, more likely than not to win somewhere in the 20s.
Let's turn our attention to the Senate. Jennifer Duffy, you're following that. If the House is considered a reasonably sure bet for Democrats to win control, that hasn't necessarily been the thinking about the Senate. Where do things stand?
No, it hasn't. I think the Senate continues to hang by a thread. I think Democrats will pick up between 4 and 6 seats. Now, 6 is the magic number. It's what they need to get their majority. We have seen some tightening in the last 5 to 7 days of some races that are pivotal. You know, in Montana, Senator Conrad Burns, the Republican, he was sort of assumed to be politically dead, that he'd been trailing by a handful of points this entire race. But now the race is even. That is about Republicans starting to pay attention and come home. Whether it's enough to pull him across the finish line remains to be seen. In Rhode Island, another race that a lot of people thought was over, that has changed a good deal. That doesn't have anything to do with Republicans coming home. That has to do with the way this campaign has played out, that the Democrat Sheldon Whitehouse has made a couple of mistakes that have cost him some support, and that, you know, the Chafee name in Rhode Island is pretty highly revered, and I think that those voters are coming home.
The Republican candidate in Rhode Island is the incumbent, Lincoln Chafee.
Right. So, you know, Democrats need one or both of those seats to be in the game. What Republicans have been saying for weeks now is that this election is going to come down to Missouri, Tennessee, and Virginia. Democrats have to win 2 of those 3 seats if they're going to take the majority.
You mentioned the race in Tennessee, and this is an interesting one. What is happening in this race? This is Congressman Harold Ford, the Democrat, against Bob Corker, the Republican.
Right. This, you know, this race has been controversial. Republicans have been criticized for some ads that they ran. Democrats accuse them of playing the race card in this race. You know, Harold Ford is an African-American. But I think Tennessee is starting to behave like Tennessee has behaved in Senate races for the past decade, where Republicans have a little bit of an advantage. There was one poll out this weekend that gave Bob Corker, the Republican, a 12-point advantage. I don't think it's that wide. But here's the important thing about Tennessee. Half of the voters have already cast their ballots in early voting, and they saw a higher percentage of African-American voters than they've ever seen. That is what I think makes the gap here pretty narrow, put a little thumb on the scale for Corker.
Amy Walter, when you think about the House races, it can be hard to see the forest for the trees sometimes with so many of them. But are you seeing regional trends in what's going on that we should be paying attention to?
Well, this has been quite a unique race for the House because in these last few elections, it has been really about the trees and very little about the forest because there were so few races that were in play. Now what we're looking at is a playing field that is much bigger than we've seen in years. We have probably about 55 seats that are in play right now. Almost all of them are held by Republicans. And when you look at the areas that Republicans are having the toughest time, they are in some of these traditionally blue parts of the country, places in the Northeast where Democratic candidates for president, Al Gore, John Kerry, have done well. But yet underneath them, the Republican incumbent has been able to hold on. This is especially true in places like Connecticut or suburban Philadelphia, or even in places in New York, where we think of these as traditionally blue states. And yet Republican incumbents win by appealing to voters with their independence. This year, it's getting that much tougher for Republicans to show their independence because voters suggest that they are looking for change. They're actually making this a referendum on the party in power.
If you think back to the 1994 election and the huge Republican wave, I think what happened was that the polls really underpredicted what ended up happening that year. Do you think there's a chance that that could also be the case in 2006? Amy Walter?
Yeah. What I do particularly is I look at these races from a very micro place, looking at the individual races and candidates, campaign ads and polling to come up with a sense of where each of these races is breaking. And the reality is that in a year like this, where the macro issues, the big environmental issues, namely the political environment, the president's unpopularity, the unpopularity of the war, could have a bigger impact than those micro factors. And so what happens in a macro year is that instead of those races, you know, maybe breaking 55% for one party, maybe 60% for one party, they break more like 75 or 80% for one party. That's how you can get from a number like Democrats picking up 20 seats to picking up 30, 35 seats.
And Jennifer Duffy, do the same rules apply in Senate contests?
You know, because there are so many fewer of them, they don't necessarily apply. And there's a major difference between 1994 and 2006, and that is how absolutely sophisticated campaigns have gotten, their ability to target voters, their ability to determine exactly where their problems are and fix them, the sheer amount of money to fix them. I mean, Amy's been saying for months that, you know, Republicans see this train coming right at them, and they do, and that applies to the Senate as well. You know, these are pretty prepared incumbents and challengers on both sides, which limits the potential for surprise.
Jennifer Duffy and Amy Walter, thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jennifer Duffy and Amy Walter track races for the Senate and House, respectively, for the Cook Political Report.
And you can find a full list of NPR's projections on tomorrow's key House, Senate, and gubernatorial races. You'll find that at npr.org.